Today's Daf and Sanhedrin is Chav Ches. We are starting today with the Mishnah of Chav Zayin Amud Beis. The Mishnah is now a continuation of the Psalm, specifically that of Krovim relatives. The Mishnah earlier in the Masechta told us that the only way to disqualify either an Eid or a Dayan is to legally designate them as either a Pasul or a Karuv. The last 4 days we've been talking about what exactly is the definition of a Psul. Now we are discussing Karuv and the definition of a Karuv. The basic idea of the Gemara is that if you have relatives that relate to one another, it's a Kasuv, it's a simple... It's a simple decree that they are apostle. You could make a rational argument that it has to do with the fact that because they're related, they're therefore going to have a bias to one another. And in fact, there may be in fact a Gemara later on that kind of indicates that this is in fact so. But the simplest way to say it, the easiest way to say it, and probably the most correct way to say it, is that Karuv is just simply a psul. That once you're related, so therefore you can no longer testify against one another. And as we're going to learn a little bit later on as well, you can't testify together with a Karuv about somebody else. The Mishnah starts off by enumerating the people that are krovim, that are relatives to one another, and therefore going to be pasul. This is the Mishnah on Chav Zayin Amud Beis. We start with the Mishnah. These are the people that are related to one another and therefore cannot testify against one another. Achiv v'achi aviv v'achi imo. The first three are your brother, your uncle, and your uncle. The difference between two and three is that two is your paternal uncle and three is your maternal uncle. Then 4, 5, and 6, ba'al achoso, ba'al achos aviv, uva'al achos imo. Your sister's husband and your father's sister's husband. That means to say that your aunt's husband and your mother's sister's husband. Again, it's your aunt's husband, but on your mother's side. Uval imo v'chamiv v'giso. We are up to now 7, 8, and 9. We are now describing your mother's husband, your stepfather, your father-in-law, and your brother-in-law. When we say brother-in-law over here, we mean brother-in-law who are two men married to two sisters. The men themselves are not related, but they're married to two sisters. So it's brother-in-law, but it's brother-in-law through two marriages. Now all these people that we just described are going to be pasul. Not only are they going to be pasul, but their sons are going to be pasul, and their son-in-laws are going to be pasul as well. So of the nine that were listed, so we really have 9 plus the sons plus the son-in-laws. So the simplest way to say our Mishnah right now is that we are describing 9 times 3. We're describing 27. Now keep that number in mind, because a little bit later on in the Gemara, a little bit on both on Chav Ches Amud Aleph and Chav Ches Amud Beis, we're going to be quoting a brisa that really has it as 8 times 3, not 9 times 3. So keep that number in mind. That number is going to become important later on. The mission then continues for Chorgol of Adon. Now, as far as the stepson is concerned, only the stepson is going to be disqualified, but the stepson's son and the stepson's son-in-law is not going to be disqualified. Amar Rabbi Yossi. Now, Rabbi Yossi, on everything we just learned, makes the following comment. Zu Mishnas Rabbi Akiva. That which we just learned together is the Mishnah of Rabbi Akiva, meaning that this version of the Mishnah, as is presented, is a Masorah that comes about through Rabbi Akiva. We learned back in the beginning of Masechta Megillah that Stam Mishnah Rabbi Akiva, that all the Stam Mishnah are following Rabbi Akiva. In fact, we generally say that Stam Mishnah Rabbi Meir, that the anonymous Mishnahs are following Rabbi Meir, but we, of course, we know Rabbi Meir was a Talmud of Rabbi Akiva. In fact, just a week ago in the Daf, we made that point very clear, that he got Smicha from Rabbi Akiva. He also got Rabbi Smicha from Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, but he got Smicha from Rabbi Akiva, and we say that Stam Mishnah is Rabbi Meir. But the truth of the matter is, and Rashi said this in the beginning of Masechta Megillah, that the Stam Mishnahs do follow the Masorah of Rabbi Akiva. And what we just learned together is the Mishnah of Rabbi Akiva, Aval, Mishnah Rishana, but there is an original Mishnah, an earlier Mishnah, I should say, which states basically the halachas that we learned together, but slightly different variation. And to learn the Mishnah Rishonah together, Aval Mishnah Rishonah, Dodo, Vendodo, V'chol, Haro'u, L'Yerosho. The Mishnah Rishonah tells us that your uncle, the son of your uncle, meaning your cousin, and anyone who stands to inherit you, is going to be puzzled to Aedah. So this Mishnah Rishonah has a correlation between between the halachas of Yerusha, of inheritance, and that of Psulei Karov. The difference between Mishnah Rishona and the Rabbi Akiva's Mishnah is Rabbi Akiva's Mishnah covers both the paternal and the maternal relatives. Mishnah Rishona really only has it lined up with the paternal relatives, since it's a function of Yerusha. We know that Yerusha goes to the father, so really Mishnah Rishona is limited to the paternal relatives, not the maternal relatives, as opposed to our Mishnah. The Rabbi Akiva Mishnah is following both paternal and maternal relatives. We're going to be discussing that more in the Gemara. The Gemara continues with Chal Karov Lo Ba'Oso Sha. Now, in order to be Pasul Eidos through Karov, you have to be related at the time. Hayakarov Nisrachik Harizekasher. However, if you're not related at the time, meaning to say that, let's say, is a son-in-law, and then the relationship between father-in-law and son-in-law is severed, either the daughter slash wife is divorced or died, so now they're no longer related, so now they are considered no longer krovim, and therefore they would be allowed to testify one for another. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, afilo mesa bito v'yesh lo banim mimena reza karov. And Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that if, let's say, it's a father-in-law and a son-in-law, and Rachmanel Salam, the daughter died, but survived by children, meaning that the father-in-law had grandchildren, the son-in-law had children, so even though there's no longer a daughter in the picture, and even though they're no longer father-in-law, son-in-law through the daughter, but the children themselves are going to connect the father-in-law and the son-in-law. The grandchildren of the father, the grandchildren of the father-in-law, the children of the son-in-law are going to be the connective tissue that will connect the two so that they will still be considered krovim. And then the Mishnah concludes with one final point in the name of Rabbi Yehuda. This is a continuation of Rabbi Yehuda. Ha'oei va'asoni. Also, people that cannot testify one against another is somebody who has a particular love for a person or someone who has a particular hatred for a person. The Mishnah gives a definition of what that means. Oei v'zeshosh bino. When we're describing somebody who has a particular love for a person, we're talking about the basically the best man at a wedding, and Sonny Koshlo Diber Imo Shoshiamim Be'eva. And when describing somebody who's a Sony, it means somebody who has not spoken to him for 3 days based on some sort of animosity they have to one another. Amru Lo, they said to Rabbi Yehuda, Lo Nechshdu Yisrael Kach. The Jewish people are not going to be they're not going to be suspected of this. And what does that mean, suspected of this? So, unfortunately, the Mishnah does not mean they're not suspected of having animosity and hatred to one another, and they don't talk to one another. Unfortunately, that part's true. But what the Mishnah means, what the Chachamim's point to Rabbi Yehuda is that even though there may be a certain amount of either hatred or love that one has to another, in a court, that will not affect their testimony, and we'll still consider them to be impartial in terms of serving as witnesses. Mishnah that takes us to the end of the Mishnah. We start with the Gemara. The Gemara's question is Minahani Mili. Where does this come from? Meaning, where do we see in the Torah that the Krovim cannot testify one for another? Tanu Rabbanan, the Gemara quotes the following brayso. Lo yimsu avos avanim ma tamu lomer. The Gemara quotes a pasuk. Now the pasuk in its entirety found in Parshas Ki Tzeitzei reads lo yimsu avos avanim uvanim lo yimsu al avos. Literally translated, it means that the father is not to die over the sons, and the sons not to die over the fathers. And then the pasuk concludes, "Ish pechato yumasu," but rather everyone dies for their own sins. Now, what exactly does that pasuk mean? So the Gemara now goes to clarify exactly that point. So, Tanu Rabbanan, starting again, lo yumsu avos abanim matam alamr. What is it coming to teach us? Im lalamish lo yumsu avos beavon banim ubanim beavon avos. Is it pasuk coming to teach me that a father will not die on account of the sins of the son, and vice versa? So harik v'namar, that's already stated in the latter part of the pasuk, ish pechato yamasu, meaning that last three words of the pasuk clearly articulates this point, that people do not die for other people's sins, but you only die for your own sins. Ella lo yumsu avos abanim be'edus banim. So the pasuk must mean that when the Torah is teaching us that a person is not to be put to death over a son, that means over the testimony of his son on his father. And conversely, vanim lo yumsu avos be'edus avos. Same thing is true regarding the testimony of the father. The testimony of the father is not to be used in order to convict his son. The Gemara goes on to ask the question, uvanim ba'avon avos lo. You mean to tell me that a son is not going to be held responsible for his father's sins? Vaksiv poked avon avos. We say it every time in Slichos that HaKadosh Baruch Hu visits the chataim of the father onto the children. So clearly there is an idea that a child is held accountable for his father's sins. So the Gemara goes on to explain, that's only talking about a scenario in which the son is behaving in the same manner that the father is behaving. So if the father was a chote and the son is a chote following in the chataim of the father, so then HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to remember the chataim of the father, and in addition to the chataim of the son, also extract punishment for the chatam of the father as well. Because you're tying the Gemara quotes of Brisa that speaks exactly to this idea. The pasuk says that as far as the chait of the fathers are concerned, they're going to carry together with the children. But then the Gemara says very clearly that's talking about a case where the son is behaving in the same manner as the father. The Gemara wants clarity on this point. How do I know? Maybe it's only talking. Maybe the sins of the father are going to visit the kid, even if the kid is not behaving in a bad fashion. So the Gemara says, yeah, but the Torah states very clearly that a person only is put to death over his own sins. So the only way we can explain the previous pasuk is that the sins of the father are going to be visiting his son, but only when the son is following in his father's footsteps and sinning the way his father was. Below, the Gemara says, but still, the Gemara quotes another pasuk and describing how a person is going to be stumbling over the sin of his brother. And the Gemara says very clearly, ish ba'avon achiv, that means in the sins of his brother. So that comes to teach me that every Jew is going to be responsible for one another. And it speaks to this idea that a person is going to be held accountable for somebody else's sins. The Gemara explains, so the Gemara says, no, that's talking about a case where one had an opportunity to give tochacha to his friend. He knew that his friend was going to be able to hear the tochacha, listen to the tochacha, and still, even though he had the opportunity to give tochacha, he didn't give it. So under those circumstances, so then a person is going to be held responsible for somebody else's sins. But otherwise, it's not the case, and a person is only going to be held accountable for his own sins, not for someone else's sins. We now turn to the top of Chav Ches Amud Aleph, a number of other points that we're going to be establishing from this very pasuk. Ashkechan avos labanim uvanim laavos. Now we see that we have a father testifying. The prohibition of the father testifying for the son, and conversely as well. Vishkoshken avos ladadi. Now the fathers cannot testify one for another. What does that mean? When we say the fathers, we mean that we're assuming that the fathers are multiple, and if they are multiple fathers, they are related to one another, meaning the fathers are really brothers. And from this point forward, we're going to refer to the fathers as generation number one. You'll understand as we go through the Gemara what we mean by that. So the fathers are generation number one, meaning they're brothers to one another. So if a son cannot testify for his father, that's generation two, the son being generation two, cannot testify for the father, that's generation one. So it goes without saying, says the Gemara, that the fathers who are generation one can't testify one against another. So that's what the Gemara means, v'koshken avos lehadadi. The Gemara goes on to say, banim levanim minalan. How do I know that the sons can't testify against the son? Now we're not talking about sons meaning brothers, we're meaning sons meaning cousins. Again, can remember that when we talked about the avos, we mean that the avos were actually two brothers. And when we're saying banim, we're saying sons of those two brothers. So what are sons of two brothers? They're cousins to one another. So now the Gemara wants to know, where does this idea get extended that even if you're a cousin to one to another, you cannot testify one against the other? So imkein lichtov kara lo yimsu avos al bein. If the Torah didn't want to communicate this idea, the Torah would have said avos al bein in the singular. My banim, what does the Torah mean by plural? Dafilu banim lahadadi, even if they are brothers one to another. Ashkecham banim lahadadi. The Gemara goes on now to explain that we do find that sons cannot testify one to another. Banim la'alma minalan. But that so far is teaching us that we cannot have one cousin testifying against another cousin. How do I know that we cannot have two cousins getting together and testifying about somebody else? So the Gemara goes on to explain. So Rabbi Chama is going to attempt to explain this based on a logical argument. The Gemara, before giving us a logical argument, sets us up with the following point. Kid the Tanya we learned in the following brisa. So we start off with a brisa that teaches us that Edom only become Edom Zomimim when both of the Edom become Edom Zomimim. Again, just a crash course. This goes back to what we've said already a number of times. If I have one set of witnesses who say that a person is liable for a particular punishment, and the witnesses were not telling the truth, they were conspiring, they were falsifying a story, and a second set of witnesses say regarding the first set of witnesses, there's no way that the first set of witnesses know what they're doing or know what they're talking about. They were with us at the time. So we have a chiddush in the Torah where the Torah says, we will do to the first witnesses what they conspired to do to the defendant. So whatever punishment was in store for the defendant is now going to rebound and reverberate against the first set of witnesses. It's a Chiddush HaTorah, which we've gone over a number of times. The Braisa is simply pointing out over here that the only time that the punishment is going to be met against the Edom Zomimim is only if both of the Edom Zomimim are proven to be Edom Zomimim. If one of the two are proven to be Edom Zomimim, we'll toss out the testimony, but we will not give the Edom Zomimim the punishment of Hazama. So the Gemara now points out, so now the Gemara says, let's consider. We're talking about a case where the two cousins are getting together and they're testifying about somebody. Now, if in the event that they are conspiring and they're Edom Zomimim, and they're both proven to be Edom Zomimim, Nimsa Eid Zomim Narag Be'edus Achiv, it comes out now that the only way that we're going to be able to kill one of the cousins is only if the other cousin is proven to be an Eid Zomim. And so, in a slightly roundabout fashion, we do have one person, one cousin dying on account of the other. Now, admittedly, it's a roundabout fashion, meaning it's not because they're testifying about one against the other, it's just because that there's a detailed halacha in which I can't kill the Edom Zomimim unless both are found to be Edom Zomimim. So the only way I could put one cousin to death is the other cousin's found to be an Edom Zomimim. So Amar Rava, so Rava, when he hears this, he says, well, tamechad na. So Rava says, I don't find that this argument is a defensible argument, because let's remember a Mishnah we learned back in Baba Basra. Back in Baba Basra, in the third paragraph, we learned extensively that if a person can prove that he's been on a land for three consecutive years by presenting Edom to come into the court and testify that he's been sitting on the land for 3 years, and there has not been a challenge to his ownership of the land, so he's going to have a kinyan chazaka. He will now have the de facto ownership of that property, even if he doesn't have a title. And the Mishnah over there tells us that the following can represent valid testimony that he's been there for 3 years. Shlosha achim ve'echem etzari fimahem, hare elu gimel edios ve'hin edus achas lehazama. So the case is as follows. Let's set up three brothers, Reuven, Shimon, and Levi, and let's have an outsider, let's call him Moshe, who's not a brother. And now the following is the following is the case where the squatter on the property now brings forth to the court four witnesses. And Moshe now will sit and testify together with Reuven about year number one, that he's been living on the property. Then Moshe is going to go with the second brother, Shimon, and that for year number two, he's been sitting on the property. And then Moshe is going to come with the third brother, Levi, and they're going to testify about year number three that he's been sitting on the property. So Moshe, together with each one of the brothers for each successive year, is going to be testifying that the squatter has been sitting on the property. Now what comes out is as follows. Now what happens if in the event that after these four witnesses testify, they were all proven to be Edom Zomimim? So what's going to happen now is that they're going to get punished with the penalty that they conspired to do. What did they conspire to do? Take away property from its rightful owner. So therefore, they're going to have to pay the defendant the value of the property. Now, what comes out is that the only way that we're going to apply the rule of Edom Zomimim is only if all four of them are proven to be Edom Zomimim. And of the four of them, three of them are brothers. Now, if Rami Bar Chama was giving an accepted argument, we should say, well, wait one second. You can't punish one family member on account of another family member. And over here, we're clearly not subscribing to that argument. Ella, so the Gemara says, what must we conclude? Hazama me'amakasi. You see, when a person gets muzam, when a person is proven to be an Eizomim, it must be that the penalty is coming from an outside source. Meaning, we don't view the brothers as being the one responsible for, or the cousins being the one responsible for, the penalty given to the other. It has to do with a detail within Hazama. But the real cause of their punishment is based on Hazama, and the fact that they're brothers or cousins is considered an external source. So the Gemara says, we're going to say the same thing over here, regarding two cousins who are testifying about somebody, and even though it's true that the only way they're going to be Hazama is both of them are muzamed, but that's not that doesn't satisfy the requirement of one convicting another. So Elaim Kain Lichtov Cross. So the Gemara says, okay, when all said and done, it's not going to be based on a Svara, as much as Rami Bar Chama wanted to give a Svara, it's not going to be based on a Svara, but rather it's going to be based on a Drasha. What is the Drasha? The Gemara now spells it out. Elaim Kain Lichtov Cross Uvein Al Avos. Inami heim alavos. The second half of the pasuk, we already know that we're talking about banim. We're talking about the children. So in the second half of the pasuk, it didn't have to say banim. It could have just said ben, or it could have just simply said heim and the pronoun. So ma banim, my banim, afilu banim la'ama. It means that Even the sons are coming together, meaning sons over here means cousins. Even if the cousins are coming together to testify about somebody else, they may not do that. The psul karuv not only prohibits them from testifying one against another, but it even is going to prohibit them from testifying to the two of them together about somebody else. Still, a couple more points to establish before we move on in the Gemara. Ashkechan krovei av, krovei ayim inalan. Now, I know that the relatives of the father are subject to the psul karov. What about the relatives of the mother? Amakra avos, avos trezim ne. It says avos two times. Yemeinu inyan lekrovei av, tenel inyan lekrovei ayim. A classic method of the way the Gemara darshins is that we have repetition of a word, and the second time it's superfluous, so therefore we're going to apply to a slightly different situation. Notably, in this case, we're talking about the krovei ha'ayim. Ashkechan lechova, we find now that the Torah tells us that the relatives cannot convict somebody, but lezechus minalan. But what if they're testifying to defend somebody, or to create a benefit for somebody? Maybe that's okay. Amakra, yumsu, yumsu, trezimni. The Gemara again rejects this based on the fact that the Torah says yumsu two times. Imeinu inyan lechova, tenehu inyan zechus. If it's not going to be able to create a liability, so, if we can't apply it for a liability because it's already been established, so therefore we're going to apply it for a zechus. So therefore, we are going to assume that the second usage of the word yumsu was coming to teach us that not only can they not testify to convict somebody, but they can't testify to defend somebody as well. Now, I know that this is true regarding capital cases, but what about civil cases as well? The pasuk says yumsu, which is obviously a capital case. How do I know that krovim cannot testify in civil cases? A point that we made in the beginning of the Masechta that we're now making again, a second time in the Masechta, and that is that there must be uniformity within the judicial system. Since we have relatives who are disqualified in the cases of capital cases, so too we're going to have relatives disqualified in civil cases as well, based on this idea that there has to be uniformity in the judicial system. Okay, Adkan. Take a moment to pause, to breathe. So basically what we have established in the Gemara from the Mishnah until now is, number one, the Mishnah listed who are the Krovim, who are the relatives that can testify, who cannot testify one against the other. And then the Gemara quoted a Braisa, and we extensively analyzed and dissected the Pasuk to teach us a number of halachas regarding Psuli Karov. The best way to think about it is basically as follows. Who can't testify one against another? So it's brothers, it's their children, and it's the children, against one another or together against somebody else. Meaning the first generation are the brothers, or the avos. So that is two brothers, so they can't testify one against the other. Now when you move down to generation number two, that means now that the son of one of the brothers can't testify about his uncle. It also means that the son of one of the brothers cannot testify about the son of the other brother, meaning the two cousins cannot testify one against the other. What we have basically now are generation one, generation two. And with whatever permutation you use, generation one cannot testify against generation number two. Not one against one, not one against two, not two against two. Okay. With that stated, that sets us up for the next Gemara, Amar Rav. We are in Chav Ches Amud Aleph. We are a little bit less than halfway down on the Amud. And the Gemara now is continuing with a shita of Rav. Achi Abba Lo Yai Li Hu Uvni Hu Uvno V'chasno. My father's brother cannot testify about me. He can't, his son can't, and his son-in-law can't. So far, so good. That's exactly what we learned back in the Mishnah. But now Rav is going to go one step further. Afani lo aid lo, I will not be able to testify against my uncle. Ani uvanai vechasni. I'm not going to testify about my uncle. My son can't testify about my uncle, and my son-in-law can't testify about my uncle. Now that is a chiddush, because in our Mishnah, the only thing we said is that two can't testify against one. What Rav is telling us is that three can't testify about one. Meaning Rav is saying that his son or his son-in-law, which is a third generation from his father and uncle, cannot testify against his uncle. That's three against one, and that is further than we went in the Mishnah. And the Gemara immediately jumps on that point. Ve'amai, havalei shlishi berishon, that's a three against one. Ve'anan sheni b'sheni tanan. And the extent of psuli karov in our Mishnah was only two against two. Sheni berishon tanan, or two against one. Shlishi berishon lo tanan, but it does not say in our Mishnah three against one. That a third generation is not mentioned in our Mishnah, and presumably our Mishnah is of the opinion that a third generation would be able to testify about a generation number one. So, my chasna de katani ma'masitzen chasna b'na. So the Gemara defensive position goes back to the Mishnah and tries to reread one of the lines of the Mishnah in a way that we did not originally present it. And that is, when the Mishnah said, "Beno uchasno," the Gemara now is reading it as the son and the son-in-law of the son. So meaning to say, let's go back to the Mishnah, let's go back to a simple case in the Mishnah. The Mishnah says you can't testify about your uncle. Then the Mishnah says, and his son, meaning your cousin, and his son-in-law. Now, the way we originally presented the Mishnah meant his son-in-law, meaning the son-in-law of the uncle. But now what the Gemara, the way the Gemara is reading the Mishnah is that son-in-law means son-in-law of the son. So that means that the way we're saying our Mishnah now is I can't testify about my uncle, his son, and then his, meaning the son's son-in-law. So the Gemara says, well, I don't understand. If the point of the Mishnah is that to go down to generation number three, v'lisni ben beno, why not just simply give me the example of a grandson, meaning the uncle's son, and the son's son? Why wouldn't the Mishnah do that if that's the whole point of the Mishnah? So So the Gemara says, yeah, it's true, the Mishnah could have written that, but the Mishnah also wanted to introduce another point, which is that when you have the husband is going to be treated like the daughter. Meaning basically a son-in-law in these halachas of Krov, of Psulei Karov, a son-in-law is considered just like a son. Meaning once he's married to your daughter, so basically he has now the halachic status of a son. So that the Mishnah wants to teach us that point as well, and that's why the Mishnah used the example of an uncle, the uncle's son, and the son's son-in-law to basically teach us two things. Number one is that the generation three is included in the Psul, and also a son-in-law is to be treated like a son. So the Gemara says, Now let's consider the Brisa of Rabbi Chiya. The Brisa of Rabbi Chiya reads as follows. Shmona Avos Shehein Esrim Va'arba. There are eight categories in our Mishnah. Avos here means like Avos Malachos, Avos Nezikin. So the Mishnah over here, there are eight main categories of Psulei Eidus, which turns out to be 24. Now, how does eight become 24? Because like we learned in the Mishnah, for every one of the relatives that are mentioned in the Mishnah, so it not only includes the relative, but it includes the son and includes the son-in-law. So basically, each one is multiplied by 3. 8 times 3 is 24. So that's how the Mishnah got to, that's how the Brice Rabbi Chiya got to 24. Now, you'll note that when we learned the Mishnah, we actually counted more than 8 different relatives who are possible. We actually counted in total 10. So how did Rabbi Chiya only get to the number 8? Who is not in Rabbi Chiya's list? So stay tuned, we're going to address that question on the Amud Beis of today's daf. But in the meantime, however, the number is 24, but Hani Klasim V'Tartin Haved. The Gemara says, but if you want to read the Mishnah like we just tried to read the Mishnah, that son-in-law does not mean son-in-law to the uncle, but son-in-law means son-in-law to the son of the uncle. So that means that really, what are we doing? We're going to the uncle, we're going to the uncle's son, we're going to the uncle's son-in-law, and then we're dropping down a generation, we're adding the next generation as well. So it should be not 24, but every one of the relatives should be at least 4, meaning 8 times 4 is 32. Now, if we just pause for just a moment and we think about it, it actually should come out to more than 32, because we're talking about the uncle, we're talking about his son and his son-in-law, and then we're dropping down to the next generation, we're talking about the son and the son-in-law of the next generation. So really, it could be 40, and the truth of the matter is, we can even argue that it's more than 40. But the Gemara's point is just very simple. Rabbi Chiya said it's 8, which is 24. So clearly Rabbi Chiya understood it to be generation 1, and then his two descendants, meaning his son and his son-in-law. So the Gemara says clearly that's how Rabbi Chiya understood it, and so Ela la'olam chas no mamash. So the Gemara says, okay, so we're going to go back to what we originally assumed, which is that the chasan over here means the son-in-law of the uncle, like we originally presented the Mishnah. The amai karele chasan beno, and as far as Rav is concerned, Rav referred to him as the son-in-law of the son. The Gemara now is making the following argument, that really we're talking about the son-in-law of the uncle. However, he is not a blood relative. He comes into the family through marriage. And what the Gemara now is proposing as a svara is that because the son-in-law is coming in through marriage, so even though he's generation 2, but because it's not a blood relative and because it's coming in through marriage, he's going to be treated like generation number 3. And that gets us to the point now where if we're having one cousin testifying not about his cousin, meaning his uncle's son, but his cousin, meaning his uncle's son-in-law, so even though it's generation number 2, but because it's a marriage and it's not a blood relative, it actually is going to be treated as generation number 3. Now, if you're following carefully, so basically what we just learned together is that this is now a disqualification of 2 testifying against 3. And the Gemara now is going to point out that that is different than what Rav said. Rav said that one can't testify against three. But we're saying actually something even more than that. We're saying that two can't testify against three, and that's even further away than one another. So Ihachi in the Gemara makes exactly this point. Havali Shlisha B'Sheni, that's three against two. The Rav Achsha Shlisha B'Sheni. And we also happen to know that Rav clearly is accepting of a three testifying against a two. So that leads to that leads to a very simple problem, which is that if we're assuming that a son-in-law is considered generation three, and we're saying now that a cousin can't testify about his cousin who is, again, not a blood relative but married into the family, so that should be two against three, but we know that Rav said it's okay for two to testify against three. So El Rav da Amar Kareb Elazar. So the Gemara says, okay, like this. We're going to now go back to the original presentation of the Mishnah. Meaning the Mishnah says that an uncle, that you can't testify about an uncle and you can't testify about a son and a son-in-law. And we're going to assume, like we have been assuming since the beginning, that that his son is generation two and his son-in-law is also generation two. And we're going to basically leave the argument that because the son-in-law comes in through a marriage, he should be treated like a different generation. We're going back to our original understanding that the son is a generation two and the son-in-law is a generation two as well. And so now all we're left to do, which is not a small task, is understand where did Rav get the halacha from that one can't testify against three, because again, once you have our Mishnah, the only thing we now know in our Mishnah is that two can't testify against two. So the Gemara goes on to explain. El Rav Da'amar Karebi Al-Azhar. So the Gemara now says that Rav is really holding like Rebbe Al-Azhar. Detain Relent and Abraiser Rebbe Al-Azhar Omer, Kishem She Achiaba Lo Yaid Li, Hu V'Novachas. Now, just like my uncle can't testify regarding me, Kach Ben Achi Abba Lo Ya'i Li Huv Novachas No. So my uncle's son can't testify regarding me, and he can't testify regarding me, nor my son, nor my son-in-law. Rebbe Elazar clearly is of the opinion that my cousin, meaning Rebbe Elazar saying, my cousin can't testify about me, and he can't testify about my children. So clearly Rebbe Elazar is of the opinion that two can't testify against three. So the Gemara says, Ve'kate havale shlisha b'sheni, ve'rav achsha shlisha b'sheni. So the Gemara says, you want a line of Rav like Rebbe Elazar, you're still stuck. Because Rav only disqualified one against three. He didn't disqualify two against three. So the Gemara says, Rav Savalek Kavasa Bechado Palegala Bechada. So the Gemara says that, yeah, Rav principally holds like Rebbe Elazar, but not exactly holds like Rebbe Elazar. Rebbe Elazar goes so far as to disqualify two against three, and Rav is only ready to disqualify one against three. Obviously, it takes us to the next question of the Gemara, my time of the Rav, so let's understand Rav. What's the basis of Rav's position? Da'amakar, the Gemara says it's based on the Pasuk Elohim Shu'avos Abanim Abanim. So what we're going to be doing now in the way we're looking at this Pasuk is we're taking the comma and we're moving it over one word. Meaning the Pasuk should read Elohim Shu'avos Abanim, comma, Uvanim Elohim Shu'avos Abanim. But now what we're doing, B'derech HaDrush, is that we're taking a comma and we're moving it over one word, so therefore the Pasuk is going to read Elohim Shu'avos Abanim, Uvanim. A person should not die over his son and the son's son. This is now the uncle against his great nephew. So this is one against three. The Rabba's door acher. The Rebbe Elazar. And the Gemara says, now what is Rebbe Elazar going to say in defense of his position, which is that two can't testify against three? Abanim amarechmana psuida v'shadi abanim. Rebbe Elazar will tell us that the disqualification of the father is going to be put on the son, meaning that just like the father cannot testify about his nephew, so too, the son cannot testify about his cousin's son as well. So in other words, basically, Rebbe Elazar is going to be taking the psul of the father and applying it to the child, and just like the father's psul is a psul going to be on his child, so too, the child's psul is going to be on his child as well. And so therefore, a cousin cannot testify about his cousin's child. What we would say in our language, it would be a first cousin once removed. Amar Rav Nachman. Okay, so before we go on to the Gemara, so basically just a quick summary. So we now have, as far as the Psul Karav is concerned, we have three basic shitas. We have the shita of the Mishnah, which is that the Psul Karav extends to first generation, meaning brother against brother, second generation, cousin against cousin, and it goes without saying that a nephew and uncle cannot testify against one another. We have the shita of Rav, which is that a one can't testify against a three, and a three can't testify against the one, which means that a great uncle cannot testify about his great nephew, and vice versa. And then we have the shita of Rebbe Elazar, which is the most machmir, which is that a son of a cousin cannot testify about his father's cousin. So the that would be the two against the three. As a point of interest, in terms of who the halacha falls like, so there's a machlokes amongst the Rishonim. Just to show you one makom on this topic, if you take a look at the last Tosfos on Chav Ches Amud Aleph, so Amar Rabbi Natan dechein halacha. The Rabbi Natan says the halacha falls like Rabbi Lazar, the Shlishi Berishon Pasul. Rabbi Natan says the halacha falls like Rav, that three can't testify against one. And he quotes Gemara, he quotes Gemara Baba Basra, he quotes Yerushalmi as well, that speaks to this idea. So anyway, so Rabbi Natan is Machshir two against the three, but is Posel a one against the three like the Shita of Rav. But again, that's just scratching the surface. There's much more on this topic. And in terms of halacha, so you need to consult first a Shulchan Aruch and then a Rav. We're not turning the daf yet, but we're on the bottom of the Amud. We are on Chav Ches Amud Aleph, towards the bottom of the Amud. Amar Rav Nachman. The Gemara now is citing a number of relatives. Now, basically, what Rav Nachman is going to do is going to construct three different cases of relatives. But what the Gemara is going to point out is that really all these three relatives are just simply mirror images of cases that we saw in our Mishnah. Remember that in our Mishnah, when we're saying that one relative cannot testify on behalf of another relative, it is also a reflexive rule as well, meaning that that relative then can testify about you. These three cases that Rav Nachman is about to present are nothing more than just simply mirror images of the cases of our Mishnah. It would be easy, quite honestly, if you just sat down and you mapped out these cases so that you can see them in front of you. I'm Rav Nachman, Achicha Masilo Yaili. So my mother-in-law's brother can't testify about me. That's case number one. So Ben Achicha Masilo Yaili, my mother-in-law's nephew can't testify about me. When we say nephew, we mean her brother's son. And Ben Achos Chamasi Lo Yaili. And my mother-in-law's nephew, but here nephew meaning your mother-in-law's sister's son, cannot testify about you. But Tanatuna, now the Gemara says, now everything we just said, these three cases of Rav Nachman, are simply a result of understanding our Mishnah and understanding the reflexive nature of our Mishnah. The Gemara quotes the Mishnah, Ba'achosa, Ba'achos Aviv, Ba'achos Imo, Hein Uvneim, V'chasnehem. So the Mishnah says that your sister's husband and your father's sister's husband and your mother's sister's husband and their sons and their son-in-law. So if you map out the case of the Mishnah, and now you just simply look at the Mishnah, not from the perspective of the principle that we're talking about, but looking at it from the other side, you're basically going to look at the three cases of Rav Nachman. Again, if you map everything out on paper, you will see everything I just said. Amar Rav Ashi, Kavina Be'ula Yibaylam. We were in the yeshiva of Ula. The following question was posed to us. Achi Chamiv Mahu. What about your father-in-law's brother? Ben Achi Chamiv Mahu. What about the son of your father-in-law's brother, meaning your father-in-law's nephew? Ben Achos Chamiv Mahu. What about your father's nephew? And again, here, father's nephew, meaning your father's sister's son. So Amar Lan Tanisui says, we all learned this in the Mishnah, Achiv, Achiv, Aviv, Achi, Imo, Heinu, V'neim, V'chasneim. So again, it's the same basic idea. In other words, all these cases that we just asked are nothing more than just reflexive examples that were in our Mishnah. Meaning, once you see the Mishnah, once you understand the case of the Mishnah, you just simply look at it from the other direction and you'll see that the questions that we just asked are exactly the cases stated in the Mishnah. We are on the very bottom of Chav Ches Amud Aleph. We're turning the page. Rav Ikla Lemizbein Gevila. Rav goes to buy parchment cloth and Baumineh, and while he was buying cloth, so they had a halachic discussion, and the following was asked of him. Can a person testify regarding his stepson's wife? Rashi says we're talking about a case of Nefs and Melug. It's a Nefs and Melug, and it comes into question. There was some sort of a litigation over it. And can a person testify on behalf of his stepson's wife? So Rav says no. Now the answer is no, because we've learned, and now we're saying it again, is that in the halachas of Karov, a husband and wife is considered a single unit, a single entity. And Besur Amru Baal Ki Ishta, Bumptisa Amru Isha Kabbalah. Okay, in Sur and Bumptisa, there are two different ways to say it, but it's the same exact point, that the husband is like the wife, or the wife is like the husband. In other words, but it's considered a unit. And just like a person cannot testify about his stepson, a person cannot testify about the wife of your stepson. The Amr Ravuna, Amr Rav Nachman, Nisha Isha Kabbalah. How do we know that a woman is like her husband? This is principally, the Gemara uses the terminology of Ishtar Kegufa. The Halacha uses the terminology of Ishtar Kegufa. The Gemara over here doesn't use exactly the terminology, but the same basic idea, that the husband and wife are considered a unit in numerous Halachas, Dichsiv. And the Gemara says, and really, this is already spoken out in the Torah. The Torah and the Parsha of Araya states, Ervas Achi Avicha Lo Sigalel Ishto Lo Sigrav Do Das Chihi. The Torah says that a person cannot be with your father's brother, meaning not really your father's brother, but meaning the wife of your father's brother. And then the Torah says, she's your aunt. Now, she's not your aunt. She's not your biological aunt. She's not your blood aunt. She is your aunt because she's married to your uncle. But the Torah is telling us that, despite the fact that it's a marital relationship, it's not a blood relationship, but still, once she's married to your uncle, she is considered your aunt halachically. And so, therefore, that's the source in the Torah that speaks to this idea of Ishtar Kegufa. Continuing now in the Gemara, Ubal Imo Hu V'Novachasno. We are now talking about a stepfather, and you can't testify about the stepfather, nor his son, nor his son-in-law. B'no Hainu Achiv. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. Isn't that basically your brother? So I'm Rav Yirmiyah L'Nitzrucha El Alachihach. So Rav Yirmiyah suggests that maybe what the Pshat is in the Mishnah is that we're not talking about a brother, but we're talking about rather a stepbrother. Meaning that what happened is that your mother had you from a previous marriage, and then your mother married a man who brought in a son from a different marriage. So the two of you have no relationship whatsoever. You're not biologically related, you're not halachically related, you're nothing to one another. And what Rav Yirmiyah suggested is that because your parents now are married, so therefore one cannot testify against the other. That is the Chiddush of Rav Yirmiyah. In a moment, we're going to see the Gemara is going to reject this Chiddush. But even within the Chiddush of Rav Yirmiyah, so Rashi makes an interesting comment. Rashi writes, Achia Ach, it's the second narrow line on the Amud. Rashi writes, Ben Sheyesh Labaal Imo Meisha Acheres Pasalo Mimnei Shehu Achi Achiv. So if you read Rashi carefully, Rashi says that he's the brother of your brother. What does Rashi mean that he's the brother of your brother? So most probably what Rashi means is that even though you and him are not related whatsoever, not biologically, not halachically, you're stepbrothers, but you have no connection from a halachic standpoint. So, but what Rabbi Yirmiyah is thinking now is that in the event that your mother and his father had a child together, so that means that you're sharing a brother. That means that you have a half-brother, and he has the same half-brother, so maybe that half-brother is creating the halachic tissue, halachic connective tissue, to put you and him together. This is probably what Rashi means, and this is the Chiddush of Rav Yirmiyah. But as I pointed out, and the Gemara is going to do so right now, the Gemara is going to reject this Chiddush of Rav Yirmiyah. Rav Chista Achshav Achiach. So Rav Chista says, no, there's no problem with stepbrothers testifying against one another. They don't have a halachic relationship one to another. So Amar Lehu Shmiel Lachad Rav Yirmiyah. So they said to Rav Chista, didn't you hear what Rav Yirmiyah said? So Amar Lehu Lo Shmiel Li Klamar Lo Svir Li. So he says, yeah, I heard it, but no, I don't agree with it. Ihachi Hainu Achiv. So now we're going to go back to our original question. So if that's true, so then how did you understand the case of the Baal Imo, the mother's husband, meaning and his son and his son-in-law, meaning his son is going to be your brother. And we've already established in the Mishnah that your brother is posel. So the Gemara says, Tana Achiv Mina Avik, Tana Achiv Mina Aim. So the Gemara says, okay, but what the Mishnah wanted to do is teach us that both a paternal brother and a maternal brother, even though it's a half-brother, are going to be halachically disqualified to testify one for another. And also the two of them to testify about others. Amr Rav Chista, Avi Chasan, Avi Kala, Me'idim Zal Zeh. Mechutanim. Rav Chista said that Mechutanim can testify one for another. Now, even though their children are married to one another, but that doesn't create any halachic kiruv between the two of them. And the Gemara gives an analogy, an interesting analogy. You know what they're like, says the Gemara? Ki achla ladana. They're like a barrel to a cover. Now, obviously, when the Gemara is making this analogy, it means, Rashi says, that a cover that doesn't fit the barrel, meaning that they're not married to one another, the children are married to one another, and that doesn't necessarily mean that they are matched one to another. And the Gemara says they're not matched one to another, and they're not considered related to one another, and there would be no psul karov for the mechutanim to be testifying one against the other. Amar Rabba Bar Chanina Meid Adam L'Ishto Arusa. A person is allowed to testify regarding his wife if they went through only the first stage of marriage. Now Rava says that's only if the money is serving to take money away from her. But if it's money that is going to go to her, so then the husband is not going to believe. Now the reason why, most probably, is because money that's going to go to her is eventually going to go to him. Meaning that they are in the first stage of marriage. Now, they don't have any financial responsibility one to another. But, being that they went through the first stage of marriage, probably what's going to happen is that they're going to go to the second stage of marriage. And he knows that. And so, if it's a question of now money going to her, any money going to her, once they get married, is going to be now shaykh to him. He's going to have at least the nifsei maluk. He's going to have the payros of that of the money that's going to go to her. So, what the Gemara now is making an argument that because he knows that money going to her is going to end up going to him, he's no gebed of her. It's self-serving, and therefore he won't be able to testify about money going to her below him. But the Gemara immediately rejects that proposal. The Gemara says no on both whether the money is coming or whether the money is going. The Gemara says that an arus cannot testify about his arusa. The Gemara says, why not? My day tech. So why did you think that an arus would be able to testify about an arusa? So the Gemara here quotes the halacha. We've seen the halacha a number of times throughout Shas. We see in today's daf as well, Sanhedrin daf chavches. Ishta arusa, when a wife is only in the first stage of marriage to the erusin. So lo onain velo metamela. He does not become an onain for her, and he does not become tamei for her. Meaning that if he's a kohen, so a kohen is allowed to be metamei for the seven krovim. One of the seven krovim is his wife, but only his full-fledged wife. Here, since it's only the wife of Erison, it's only the first stage of marriage, so he does not have a heter to become a tamei for her. V'cheinhi lo onens v'lo metamei lo. Similarly, she doesn't become an onen for him if he dies, and she doesn't become tamei for him. Now, at this point, always Rashi always struggles with this point of the Gemara. She doesn't become tamei for him. What does that mean? If she's a bas kohen does not have the prohibition of tumah. So what exactly the Gemara means over here, she doesn't become tamei to him. So Rashi says, Rashi over here says it's brought in here for the purposes of symmetry, but it's not really, it doesn't have a halachic it doesn't have a halachic meaning over here. Meis hugo v'ksuva sa. If he dies, she's going to collect the ksuva in the event that a ksuva was written. It's not normal for a ksuva to be written by the point of erusin, but if it was written at the point of erusin, so she'll be able to collect the ksuva. Anyway, so, but what do we see from here? We see from here is that an arusa is not considered related to her husband in the halachas of onen, in the halachas of tumah. So basically what we were thinking, the havamina was, that since the relationship is not as strong enough to create avelus and mourning, so it's not strong enough to create a psul kiruv, meaning that they're not considered related to the extent that they can't testify one against the other. So the Gemara says, Hasan b'sheira tala rechmana, but the Gemara says, yeah, but consider. When we're talking about the halachas of onim, when we're talking about the halachas of tumah, that's a function of she'iro, meaning that the Torah says that onim and tumah only comes about when it's she'er, when they are of a close relationship, meaning that they have a full husband-wife relationship. Akati la she'erohi, and until the point where they are together, husband and wife, intimately, so they are not considered a she'er, they're not considered a close relationship. But hacha, but over here, meaning when it comes to the psul of karov, mishum ikruve daitahu, the psul of karov is coming about through kiruv das, through basically a closeness and affinity one has to another. And v'ha ikrivu daita lagaba. And since they've gone through erusin, they now have the necessary kiruv das, which brings about the psul karov. I mentioned the beginning of the shir today. In other words, the psul karov is a gzeiros hakasav. It's just simply, it's the Torah says that the relatives can't testify one against the other. I suggested earlier that maybe there's a svara that because they're related to one another, so they're not going to be able to be unbiased one to another. But as much as that's generally rejected, and that's not the way to look at it, but our Gemara certainly seems to at least allude to the idea that the idea behind a psul karov has to do with kiruv das, has to do with the fact that they're close to one another and they have a hard time to sing objectively one another. But again, acknowledgement that the Gemara does say that, but the normative way to understand the psul karov is that it's just simply an objective psul. It's just simply halacha. Let's do a little bit more for today's daf. Chorgo levado. We are now discussing the stepson. The stepson by himself is going to be pasul. So Tanu Rabbanan chorgo levado. Rabbi Yossi Omar Giso. Now the first person we just quoted is very cryptic. It says that only the chorgo, only the stepson, and Rabbi Yossi counters with brother-in-law. And again, brother-in-law in this context means that the two brothers, the two men married two sisters, but they're brother-in-laws. V'tani idach giso levado, and then we have another brother that says only the giso, only the brother-in-law, meaning but not the brother-in-law's children. Rav Yehuda Amar Chogon, Rav Yehuda says stepson. So really, there's just not enough words in either of these braces to really understand the bright the brace is talking about. So the Gemara now makes an attempt to try to understand what these braces are saying. My ka'amar. Gemara's question over here, really simple. What are the braces saying? Ilem ha'achi kamar. So the Gemara suggests maybe that this is a pshat in the braces. Chorgo levado v'hua din l'giso. When Rav Yehuda in the first in the first brisa says that only the stepson, he means chorgo levado, meaning the stepson and only the stepson, meaning not the stepson's children, and the same thing which we true with brother-in-law, only the brother-in-law, not the brother-in-law's children. The asa Rav Yossi lemeimer gisa levado v'huadin lechorgo, and Rav Yossi says no, it's going to be only the brother-in-law and. And it's going to be, it's only going to be the brother-in-law, and the same thing is going to be true with Chargo as well. So the Gemara says, Ela masisna diktani giso hu uvno v'chasno. So the Gemara says, well, if that, meaning basically, what Rav Yossi and Rav Yehuda are doing is agreeing to the conclusion, it's just a question of which one was more obvious than which one, in terms of only this one, but not their children. But they both agree, but the Gemara says, Ela masisna diktani giso hu uvno v'chasno. But the Gemara says that the brother-in-law is going to be disqualified, and the children of the brother-in-law are going to be disqualified. The son and the son-in-law of the brother-in-law is going to be disqualified. So money of the Rav Yehuda of Rav Yossi. So then our mission doesn't fit into either one of the shitas as we just presented it. Ve'ela hachi kamar. So the Gemara says, okay, so we're going to have to obviously give a different shot in the braisa. Chorgo levado v'gisu hu v'no v'chasna. So we're going to suggest that according to Rav Yehuda of the braisa, it's going to be only the stepson and not the brother-in-law. When it comes to the brother-in-law, it's going to be the brother-in-law together with his son and his son-in-law. And Rav Yossi comes along and says, no. Oh, the brother-in-law by himself, meaning and not the sons of the brother-in-law, but when it comes to the stepson, it will be the stepson together with his son and his son-in-law. So the Gemara says, Ve'ela hadini Rav Chia. The Gemara says, okay. I says, that could possibly be the pshat in the brisa, but now for a second time in today's daf, let's go over the brisa of Rav Chia. What did the Brice of Rabbi Chia teach us? Shmona Ava Shein Asmin Va'arba. There are eight principal relatives in the Mishnah, of which going to include both the son and the son-in-law. And again, so that means 8 times 3, which is 24. So come on. Now the problem is, Loka Rabbi Yosef, Loka Rabbi Yehuda. It's not going like Rabbi Yosef, nor is it going like Rabbi Yehuda. Meaning, remember, how many cases were there back in the Mishnah? So there were 10 cases in total in the Mishnah. So 10 cases in total in the Mishnah, if the Brice of Rabbi Chia is only saying that for 8 of them, it includes son and son-in-law, so that means that 2 have to be extracted, 2 have to be removed. The way we're saying now the pshat in the Brisa between Rav Yossi and Rav Yehuda, only one of the two is going to be removed. So if only one of the two is going to be removed, so that now brings us to 9. It's 9 times 3, which is 27. Not the Brisa of Rabbi Chia, which says 8 times 3, which is 24. Ela hachi kamar. So now the Gemara is now in the third round of trying to understand the Brisa, and the Gemara now suggests the following. Chorgo levado v'gisu hu v'no v'chasno. So the first sheet, the sheet of Rav Yehuda is that it's just the stepson, but when it comes to the brother-in-law, it will be both his son and his son-in-law. The Asar of Yosel Meimar Gisel Avad V'Chol Shekein Chorgo, that your brother-in-law and only your brother-in-law, your stepson and only your stepson. So now what Rav Yossi is doing is he's taking 2 away from the Avos, from the main cases. So now that's 10 minus 2, that's 8. And that's the Brice of Rabbi Chia. And the Gemara now makes exactly that comment. Masisan Rabbi Yehuda, Brice of Rabbi Yossi. The mission now is going to be going like Rabbi Yehuda. The Brice is going to be following like Rabbi Yossi. And good. And the Gemara says, and now we would have a good pshat in both the Mishnah and in the Brisa. And we have a pshat now in the Brisa that we just finished quoting. Okay. That was, admittedly, a lot of information that we just went over in the course of today's daf. Highly recommend that you review it a couple of times just to wrap your head around all the family members and all the permutations of all the cases that we went through.